I'm Liz Grossman.
I'm Rachel Gilman-Rischel.
And I'm Molly Each. You're listening to the Between Bites podcast, a nonprofit food-inspired storytelling series. We feature first-person stories from chefs, restaurateurs, writers, and others in the food and drink industry. Episodes are recorded live in Chicago bars and restaurants. We hope you enjoy.
After working in film, fashion, and event planning, our next reader discovered his one true vice, all things food. In his career, he's traveled the world for a startup, assisted a celebrity chef, and edited a wine magazine, so it's only fitting that he's now a reporter for the Chicago Tribune's food and dining section. When not drinking champagne or tracking down the next great sandwich, you'll find him, camera and phone in hand, documenting his latest meals, kitchen disasters, and travels around the web. Please welcome Joseph Hernandez.
Hi, everyone. So this story is called The Bun That Got Away. As soon as the telltale signs of Christmas and the holiday season start to go up, I always feel equal parts thrill and dread run down my spine. Thrill for the jolly and joy engendered by sparkling lights, fragrant garlands, vivid poinsettias, dread that I have to go do family things and, you know, participate. Don't get me wrong, my family is full of wonderful people, this year's election notwithstanding, but I'm just not into gatherings, at least not mostly. Day drinking brunch, count me in. Small talk, tap me out. If I'm being really honest, I'd love to Rip Van Winkle myself out of the holiday season entirely, if only because I'm easily agitated by pleasantries. I walk that fine line of introvert and misanthrope, and the year, end of year makes it worse. No one knows this more than my brother Francis, even though we've never talked about, well, feelings. I'm the oldest in my family, four boys total, and Francis came 3 years later. Growing up, we were adversaries. I was, am, the know-it-all, and he's the smartass. While I was the well-behaved one, he did whatever he wanted. I'd be the one to get in trouble for an A-minus, while his C's would get a thank God. I'm still annoyed by this. 1 year before our youngest brother was born, my grandparents came to visit us in Southern California. It being summer, they took us to Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park, California. Everyone knows about the Magic Kingdom that is Disneyland, smack dab in the middle of the OC. But Knott's is a famous theme park in its own right. An actual berry farm in the 20s, the Knott family began growing their business during the Depression. First, Cordelia Knott started selling fried chicken to guests, buying the family's famous berries. And sometime mid-century, Walter Knott created a replica ghost town on the property. In the years since, it's expanded into 40 rides and attractions, and, you know, it's an amusement park. There we were, three young boys, ages 5, 7, and 10, and their beleaguered grandparents. Bless their hearts. Michael was too small to call the shots, so Francis and I established an uneasy compromise. We'd take turns choosing the rides. We dragged our Lola and Lolo from ride to ride, no rhyme or reason, to our park crawl. We could have saved a lot of time tackling it geographically, but this was an adventure. At some point during the, between riding the giant tower drop and wooden roller coaster called Ghost Rider, we had to eat. My grandparents, who would never indulge us with overpriced park food, took us down the street to the fanciest restaurant I had ever been to, a place called Fuddruckers. My parents never took us out to eat. Hint, three boys. So this was a treat, as amusement park rides and a meal cooked by a stranger. My brothers and I were already amped. Best day ever. I realize now, as a professional food writer, how unfancy it actually was. Located off the smoggy 91, Fuddruckers is the kind of place you expect to find off a major freeway that feeds into an amusement park. Fast casual before fast casual was actually a thing. The restaurant is set in a strip mall besieged by minivans filled with howling kids and put-upon adults. And the chain claims the world's greatest hamburgers, but who's giving out these fake Michelin stars? Underneath its canary yellow and cobalt blue sign, the place was a riot. Literally. Overhyped kids who had spent hours building up adrenaline were now cramped in a tiny dining room, painted primary colors. The outdoor canary yellow found its way onto the ceiling, sickly reflecting light onto a beige tile floor, while red and white checkered tables were perpetually sticky because kids are disgusting. That my grandparents brought us into this lion's den shows how optimistic they were about us being gentlemen. As I said, I'm the high-strung one, and Francis annoys me because he refuses to follow my lead. When we got to Fuddruckers to fuel up, we took the opportunity to craft our afternoon strategy, which is to say we were dicks to each other. No, you already made us stay on the swings. It's for weenies. You're a weenie. You are. And so on. Luckily for my grandparents, burgers arrived in time to shut us up. I ordered off the exotic menu, featuring the likes of boar, elk, and other weird meats. I opted for buffalo, indulging my pretentious, snot-nosed kid taste to impress my grandpa, who I'm sure didn't give a shit about what I was eating, except that I picked the most expensive thing on the menu. The thing was huge. The bun's a pair of cumulus clouds sandwiching crunchy iceberg lettuce, a thick disc of hothouse tomatoes, gooey cheese, and a charred puck of meat. I summarily ripped the tomato out. At the time, I was disgusted by the stuff. The watery veg banished from my burger, I tore through that thing with a biblical gnashing of teeth. It was so good. As I got oily meat juice all over my face and ketchup all over my hands on the table, hashtag sticky, I forgot all about the rides that I wanted to go on. That is until stupid old Francis started talking to my grandma, or grandpa, instead of eating. Promise that we can go on my ride first when we get back? Yeah, bud, sure. Francis, that dirty rat fink, took advantage of my inability to leave food untouched and got a promise from my grandpa. He got to dictate the first ride. I started to see red. I'm first. I'm always first. I was born first, and I always win, and this will not stand. As if in the slow motion, he turned back across the table and slowly, deliberately looked me in the eye as a victorious smirk etched across his face. Before or since, I have never been so angry eating. Riding his victory, Francis continued to talk to Lolo about all the rides he could choose from, the stagecoach, the wooden roller coaster, the coal mine. Meanwhile, I scarfed through my burger, plotting revenge, when it hit me. Francis hadn't yet touched his. There it was, just sitting right in front of him, because he's as boring as he is annoying. He got a regular beef burger, topped simply with cheese and a tomato. Distracted, I slowly walked my fingers across to his table and snatched the burger from his plate, but not before I ejected the tomato from it, warm and limp, onto his plate. I was finishing up Burger 2.0, going so far as to lick my fingers in his general direction, when Francis looked down before jerking his fat little face in my direction, realizing what had just happened. His lower lip started to tremble as he picked up the tomato slice and, defeated, tried to throw it at me. Gravity had other plans, and the tomato fell midair, making a wet plopping sound as it landed on the table. Oh, the wailing. As my poor grandparents realized what they had on their hands and ordered another burger for him, I cackled at my brother. I'll eat that one too, causing even more tears. I won, and I enjoyed my sweet victory by languorously eating my fries one at a time. When we got back to the park, though, he got to ride whatever he wanted. He won, actually, as I was incapacitated by tummy O's and vomited everywhere, fittingly enough, after Montezuma's revenge. We stayed another half hour when my grandparents finally grew wary of us brats and said, fuck it, taking us home. These days, I'm less inclined to steal food off my brother's plate, though every holiday he finds some way to bring up my short-lived Hamburglar phase. And maybe that's where my dread comes from, reliving an incredibly selfish moment 20 years later, even after I like to think that we've gotten better with each other. Then he'll say something wildly impractical, and I'm reminded that my annoying kid brother will never leave me alone. We're stuck with each other.
Thank you, Joseph. So our next reader was born and raised in Galway, Ireland, and has left his mark on Chicago's restaurant scene since he moved here in 1997. Over his impressive career, he's opened Italian restaurant Coda di Volpe in the Southport Corridor, neighboring restaurants The Gage and Acanto across from Millennium Park, and The Dawson, which actually hosted the second Between Bites, in January of 2014. His most recent endeavor is Beacon Tavern, located behind the Wrigley Building. We were really hoping he'd show up in the smoking jacket and monocle he asked if he could wear tonight when we asked him to read, but we're confident his story will be great in whatever dapper attire he dons. Please join me in welcoming Billy Lawless.
When I first spoke about tonight's event with Liz, I was overcome with paralyzing fear. How does one prepare for an evening of literary ponderings for the holy trinity of food writing of Liz Grossman, Molly, and Rachel? Actually, it was quite the contrary. I was more petrified with what to wear to impress this three-headed diva bastion of fashion. Hopefully they approve. It's like opening Yelp for any self-respecting restaurateur, a game of emotional Russian roulette. I'm moving swiftly on. As you can guess, I'm trying to digress in order to fill the 6-minute speaking engagement. You would think, as a native Irishman, that such a simple challenge would be easily handled. Indeed, as part of a nation known for their literary poignancy, think Seamus Heaney, winner of the Nobel Prize, William Butler Yeats, dare I say, a muse of the late Lady Gregory, or of course, Oscar Wilde, who famously stated that only dull people are brilliant at breakfast. Or even George Bernard Shaw, who wrote, "There is no love sincerer than the love of food." And finally, the inimitable James Joyce. Surely with such a rich history, I should be up to the task. Well, fear not, my captive audience, I am. James Joyce and I share a common bond. We both attended the same Jesuit boarding school in Ireland, Clongowes College. Since its foundation in 1814, Clongowes has been one of the preeminent secondary schools in Ireland, educating leaders of all facets of Irish society and some of the country's significant historical figures. Now, I know you're also wondering how I fit into this rather lofty preamble with my dodgy and smutty demeanor. However, as a product of their system, the Jays, or Jesuits if you don't know what that means, certainly instilled a sense of adventure and personal enlightenment that has driven me from the shores of the west of Ireland to college in England, the desert vistas of Egypt, and my now home here in the US of A. Now, what the hell has this got to do with a food fight? Well, if you've been paying attention, I mentioned an all-boys boarding school. I entered it at 11 and exited at 18. For 6 years, we dined in the refectory, or as we used to call it, the ref. Now, the ref is a wonderful study in human evolution. As we entered in year one, like effigies from the primordial soup, by sixth year, we were the prowling predators of an African savanna. One would have to queue up to enter with their tray and slink past the menacing sixth years, who were like the chosen anointed about to leave this Orwellian enclosure. Boarding school was like a Haiti mix of Animal Farm and Lord of the Flies. Epithets, insults, and food were tossed about with the ferocity of Zulu spears. No one was immune, and everyone was a target. It was not really survival of the fittest, more like survival of the wittiest, although a touch of brawn went a long way also. For 6 years, we grew up in the ref, and on the same diet, Monday to Sunday, for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The menu did not change once during my tenure at Clongowes. Such was our disdain for this culinary slop that we received. Food fights were common. Typically, it involved dough bowls of white bread, so tasteless that there was a begrudging ingenuity to its existence. The goal was to hit an unsuspecting six-year anointed, which often happened, to much applause and terrifying retribution. As with any evolutionary ecosystem, the lower years were always easy and malleable targets. No matter how one tried, however, no one ever escaped the wrath of the 6 years, although we always did enjoy the illusion of anonymity until invariably one of our brethren sold us out. In some small part to the above experience, I have a love-hate relationship with food. Actually, I fight my yearnings almost daily. My team will tell you of my obsession with cleanses. I love to torment myself with diet challenges, which leave my chef team baffled. Tastings are routinely cancelled because of my personal battle with food and the haphazard timing of my cleanse cycle. Almost monthly, I do 3-day cleanses, which consist of a severely limited calorie intake. I believe Chris is here too to verify. Thank you, Chris. This too is like an examination of the human condition. Day one, I start off enthusiastic, confident. Breakfast is a breeze, lunch is not too bad, and dinner I can just about make it as you get a scoop of vanilla ice cream. Although my misogynistic tendencies are all too evident as I torture myself on the line and in pastry, oogling food that tastes fabulous but will forgore any chance of wearing Speedos. Day two is brutal, as lunch consists of 4 ounces of cottage cheese and 5 Ritz crackers. Now, in my opinion, there is nothing more soul-destroying to the human palate than cottage cheese and skim milk. Thankfully, skim milk is not part of this personal food fight. Although trying to stomach cottage cheese is akin to eating raw pig brains. Day three is not too bad, as the specter of having a morning cortado is only 24 hours away. My human condition varies from chipper to suicidal to euphoric, depending where I am on the dieting carousel. For sure, my worst managing moments have come on day two, as I am irritable and discontented. The resentment I have towards a venison burger is palatable. But pain is only temporary, and especially self-induced dietary pain is mine. But the fight goes on like the never-ending battle between good and evil in a Marvel comic. In essence, I am the embodiment of a food fight, as food permeates all aspects of my life. To some extent, it is the barometer of my happiness and my place in life, as it is responsible for my livelihood and identity in the great circle of the human experience. My gratitude to food goes beyond my own personal gain, as it is the lifeline of humanity itself, and I hope within my own small food that I can make a difference.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about us at between-bites.com and follow us on social media as Between Bites.